You're very welcome back to the programme, and we're joined in studio by Nicole Brown, who's manager of the refuse company Panda here in Donegal. Nicole, thank you for your time.
Good morning, Greg.
And I appreciate you coming up and talking to us. It's not for everyone, the old radio crack, but it's an important story to get out there. And we're going back to the early hours of Tuesday morning. What unfolded?
So our crew was out as normal, left in their commercial waste whenever they came across a 1,100 litre bin, which for a lot of people might know what this is, but it's an industrial bin for commercial customers. And they have a procedure that they follow, that they hit each side of the bin before they empty the bin, just in case there's someone in the bin. Doesn't normally happen here in Letterkenny, but in the city in Dublin, other depots of ours would see this more common. And they opened the bin and they seen like a knee sitting up. So they pulled the blanket back and there was a fella in the bin, which scared, I suppose, both of them.
Yeah.
And they just left the bin.
Right. So, I mean, listen, fair play to you crews following the health and safety guidelines, banging on the bin, opening the lid and spotting the knee from there. I mean, hypothetically, if they weren't as thorough as they are, that bin's loaded and tipped straight in.
Yeah.
What could have been the consequences?
Well, if that fella hadn't have, really, if he had continued to sleep, that bin could have went to the lorry and could have went in. Now, there is emergency stops on the lorry, but sometimes it could be too late. You know, it could have ended a different way. Thankfully, okay. They do follow procedure.
Exactly, and that's the important thing here, that this was avoided because of the training of your team and the fact that they follow health and safety guidelines. Has this happened before, as far as you are aware, with your company or other companies in this area?
Not in Letterkenny, no, or Donegal that I've ever heard. It does happen in Dublin City. That's why I suppose Panda is such a big company, and we do follow procedure. We do regular toolbox talks and through the crews, especially in the winter time, because they would see this more common. Whenever it's getting colder, that people would look for shelter. They would normally go into like a DMR bin, which is a recycling bin, cover themselves with cardboard, which sometimes it's hard to see anybody. This was actually in a general waste bin, which was a bit surprisingly, and they had a blanket. So this person must have been taking shelter here maybe a few times or somewhere, we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But the main thing, he was safe.
Yeah, and this is a reminder for all waste companies, and that's why we're talking. I mean, it's the same issue, but it's separate to some extent, that this person is so desperate that they would seek a waste bin as a somewhere to sleep.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it was very surprising for the crew.
As you say, I presume it's quite obvious that the contents of a recycled bin are probably cleaner, ordinarily cardboard, plastics, that type of stuff, less sort of food waste, dirty waste.
Yeah.
So that's why it's more surprising that you might find someone in such a... I mean, obviously, neither you or us want to in any way embarrass or identify the person involved, but is this person homeless? Is this...
Well, we're unsure of that. It was at a commercial business in the Letterkenny area. So really what we want to put across is for other waste companies to ensure, I suppose, that they do have actions there in place to check these bins, and also for maybe residents around that they check maybe their bins, because if people are starting this in Letterkenny area, you know, you could have a child maybe could walk out there and someone getting out of their bin. And that's pretty scary for them.
Yeah, for sure, indeed. A bit of a shock for your crews too at that time of the morning.
Yeah,
to find someone
like this was half five in the morning, so they didn't expect that.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously then the procedure to be followed would be to report the matter to the Gardaí. Not necessarily that, obviously no one should have to seek refuge in a refuse bin, but also to ensure that the Gardaí can check that this person's okay.
Yeah, well, we did report it to the Gardaí, and they said that if it ever happened again, that it should be reported straight away, and that they would be called to the site wherever it happens.
Mm.
But it shouldn't be the case.
And it's not being dramatic or sensational to say that if your crews hadn't followed those health and safety guidelines, this could have been very different.
100%.
Because the bin tipped into the lorry, and I presume it condenses the waste
yeah.
to be able to accommodate more.
Yeah.
And as you say, there are still checks and balances there, but you'd have to see the person and know there was an issue.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Right, okay.
Well done to the crew. That
yeah, I think so. I think so, because especially at that time of the morning, you know, yeah. Some of us in other lines of work, you might be guilty of cutting corners, but this is a matter of life and death. And because they followed those rules so stringently, this person avoided serious injury or worse.
Yeah.
All right, 100%. Okay. And the purpose of the conversation is to get the message out there. Well, just reiterate the message, because it's coming from you. Obviously, for and I'll let you say it in your own words, for bin companies, refuge company, to do what yous are doing, but also to, I suppose, in terms of business owners, homeowners, what's your advice?
Yeah, well, like for our waste company, like, you know, we do follow precaution procedures there to make sure that the bins are checked, especially the big bins. They always open the lid, hit the sides of the bins just in case somebody is in it. As I say, we've never come across it before, but in the cities they have come across it. So we just follow procedure. And then for like home owners around, I suppose, Letterkenny area or any town,
yeah.
This you're probably going to see it more likely to happen there. We've never seen it happen before, but if it's a thing that's starting out.
And we're heading into the winter.
Yeah, that's it. We always do a lot of toolbox talks through the winter time to, you know, keep our crews up to date with this.
Right, okay. Well, listen, I hope that the fellow in question too gets the support that he may well need. But Nicole, thanks for calling up and helping us get the message out there.
No worries, thank you very much.
I think it's really important, not only just for other refuse companies, other waste companies, but also, of course, business and homeowners, because often these bins are kept out of the wind. I know some of them, the bigger ones, have brakes on them and all, but, you know, you can see how it might be attractive to desperate people, especially the recycling bins, which would be probably thought to be more cleaner. Nicole Brown, manager of Panda Donegal, thank you very much for calling in.
Thank you for having me.
All right, okay.
But then I think of the grander scheme. Won't think about.
That is the sound there of Zoe McCauley, one of our finalists in the Irish Music Month competition, Tessio. They're a singer-songwriting duo from Derry, Jude and Colm. We also have Owen Ferry. He's 18 years of age and from Gweedore. And lastly, we have the Afades. They're an Irish indie rock band. All four of them will be performing live as part of Irish Music Month local final in on Greenon Theatre. 9 till 12, we'll have those guys singing three tracks. Jimmy and Paul will be there. If you want to see a radio show live and you want to see fantastic live music, get on to greenon.com right now and book your seat in that beautiful theatre. They are free, of course. You can also ring the box office and they will sort them out for you as well. It's all part of Irish Music Month. We're joined on the programme now by Deirdre Kenny, CEO of One in Four. Deirdre, good morning to you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Now, your organisation has welcomed the publication of the Scoping Inquiry Report, its recommendations and the government's approval of a commission investigation. It's a monumental report, isn't it? And I mean, it really paints a very troubling, horrible picture of what so many children went through at the hands of some despicable human beings.
Yes, that is sadly true. The report presents a very deeply troubling account of widespread sexual abuse and physical abuse in our schools. And I think it exposes a systemic culture of abuse and silence where a lot of the authority figures either normalised the behaviour or ignored it. And I think it's very disturbing.
Have we ever any insight, Deirdre, into how coordinated or organised this was, or how could so many people get themselves into a position and want to do this to children and find a ways to avoid being found out or getting away, or how to treat those children so they didn't say anything? I find it hard to believe that, you know, 800 or 900 individuals knew to do this without some level of coordination or a ring of some description or other.
It's very difficult to say, and we don't have that insight, especially from this report. Now, it is, I think, some of the survivors speak in the report of exactly that they suspected that. And again, they speak of, you know, authority figures knowing or ignoring or normalising the behaviour. I guess when somebody can act with impunity, and I think when a behaviour like that is normalised. Of course, it becomes ingrained in a culture, maybe within a school or an institution, and it flourishes and more people are harmed. So I think, you know, when we're talking about the issue of especially sexual abuse of children, it happens in secret, and sometimes it's an open secret. There's a lot of shame that's left with the child and a sense of responsibility. So it becomes a vicious circle. And the less we talk about it, or the less we give people the opportunity to have a safe space where they can talk about it, the more it happens. And I guess often we're looking in the rear view mirror at this issue. But we know that the figures of sexual abuse in Ireland haven't declined, even though we've begun to speak about it more. Our CSO would say that, in fact, the figures have slightly increased. The location of that abuse has probably changed somewhat. But certainly it's still something to be very concerned about for the children the people who are children now.
Yeah, and much of that abuse has moved online as well, which
That's
I think
true.
Maybe
yeah.
that you were alluding to there. And, you know, we saw one secret group cracked there not so long ago, and there was tens of thousands of members from Ireland who were actively participating in the abuse of children through the creation and distribution of images. So we can't think that this is something of our past and ignore our responsibility in the present. None of this conversation would be possible without the incredible bravery of the victims, alleged victims, speaking out. Many of them, I'd imagine, for the first time. And I think it's imperative, is it not, that we ensure that their stories, their experiences are handled with extreme care, that we don't re-traumatise these people.
Exactly. And I think the scoping inquiry created a safe space very consciously for people to talk about what had happened to them in schools. And I guess it set a very strong foundation for uncovering the truth about abuse in schools. And we would like to see a similar approach to a commission to inquire. We know that any adversarial approach to dealing with this issue can lead to re-traumatisation of survivors. So again, you know, we know too much to get this wrong. Mm-hmm. We really need to use the knowledge we have, and the voice of survivors have been central to this report. And I think we have to honour that, as you say, courage that people have had to come forward and to make it a safer place for people to continue to disclose in our communities and in our families. And we have to respond to that with compassion. I suppose the default is often to disbelieve, because that keeps us from, you know, having to deal with the reality of it. But it's so important as a society that we start to get to grips with this, or we'll be still doing inquiries in another, you know, 20 or 30 years.
Yeah, for sure. And also, you know, what came to my mind this morning was all the voices that will go unheard because they've passed away and maybe, you know, died before their time for whatever reason without ever having sort of their stories heard. That does bother me. Obviously, yeah. this is focusing on schools run by religious orders. Is now the time to expand this and say, look, if we're going to face up to this as a nation, and we're going to talk about things like potentially redress and what have you, that we widen this out. Let's get everything onto the table. Yes, of course, these are schools run by religious orders, but let's widen the scope to all schools.
Yes, there is a recommendation that should be the case. And again, that is something we would absolutely support. There's nothing to say that schools run by religious were any different than, you know, Catholic religious schools to any other type of religion or, you know, mainstream schools. So I think I'd hope to see that happen. I suppose the vastness of what a commission would have to deal with, even as it stands, is just so complex that I think it'll take some time to get their heads around the terms of reference for a commission. But yes, there shouldn't be any difference between, you know, where you went to school or who ran the school. If you were caused harm in a school of this nature, then you should be entitled to engage with the commission. It's likely there will be some sampling, I suspect, it's also important that the commission is efficient and speedily, and that we're not waiting for a decade for the outcome. So there may need to be sampling, but I think certainly at the moment, it seems that the mood is that it would be expanded. It's just how that happens, I'm not sure.
And we don't want to have to go through all this process, and then talk about redress scheme, and then talk about, is it the state that's going to, if there's a financial responsibility, is it going to fall to the state? What about the religious orders? What are they I would love to see all of that being worked through at the same time, so this doesn't prolong it for ages, because there's still question marks about redress that was agreed, and people not coming up with their what they're responsible for. Obviously, we've got the likes of 1 in 4 there to support survivors. Should we have had, or maybe there is, something that coincides with the publication of this report, sort of state-run or state-funded or state-promoted, to support those that are going to be, many going to be re-traumatised by this entire conversation? Is that there, or should it be there, or should it form part of any findings of this inquiry when it actually begins?
Yes, well, it's a very good question. I suppose services like ourselves are under pressure in these situations and very much often under-resourced. The HSE has a service which also there are waiting lists for. So again, in the report, it speaks to the support and the skills support and specialist support that survivors deserve. And again, that's a recommendation, obviously, that we would support. I think, again, the survivors speak so eloquently about the impact on their lives and how complex that is, from, you know, failed relationships to parenting. And I think it seems to have got captured, you know, I think the motivation of the minister to do something about it. But that only translates if they can fund the organisations like ourselves properly to help people deal with the consequences of this.
Yes, and because we have to take, in doing so, we have to take responsibility for the re-traumatisation, or however it might be phrased. Each individual is going to feel this differently. Some might be elated. I'm not saying, you know, that finally there's some progress. Everyone is an individual. But we have to make sure organisations like yours, if they're not being provided directly by the state, are funded to deal with the inevitable increase in phone calls, because then there are another cohort of people that might feel empowered to speak, that, you know, that will need support off the back of these types of conversations. Because some of the stories, Deirdre, and maybe we should face up to it, but you would really have difficulty reading them out on daytime radio or in any platform. But they are contained within these reports of what these children went through. Not just the abuse at the time, the fact that it was in front of other adults, in front of other classmates or things like that, but in their own time, the stress that they were under to try and avoid going back to school, to try and figure out on their own, a little tiny little developing brain trying to figure on their own, to the point where one person had picked a spot where he or she believed that they could step out in front of and be sure to be hit by a car to avoid them having to go back to school and face the horrible abuse that they went through. That's just one example of not just the actual abuse, but how it framed a child's experience of life. It's horrible. It's horrendous.
It is, and it's so, I suppose, multifaceted and long-lasting, potentially. So any child who has been in that situation brings that fear into adulthood and into every part of their life. And, you know, the fact that they've survived that and been able to articulate that is just incredible and shows enormous fortitude and determination. But there will have been consequences, you know, across their lifetime, and you multiply that by thousands. And the reality is that, you know, we're all experiencing the impact of that in our communities, because, you know, it doesn't happen in isolation. So again, we have a collective responsibility to respond and to encourage government to respond appropriately and give people the services that they deserve.
I mean, I spoke to a gentleman, I think he was somewhere in his late 60s. You know, he got married, had children, successful business person. And as soon as the conversation began about his experience as a young child, it just reappeared. It all just reappeared. And that's what a lot of people have to do. That's what the experience is for a lot of people. It affects you right up until the end. Okay, Deirdre, we'll watch closely. We have all a responsibility, I think, that this is done right. Thanks for your time this morning. If anyone wants to contact 1 in 4, and we'll obviously list any other supports that are out there. But if anyone wants to contact 1in4, how do they do so?
They can do that through our website at 1in4.ie, or they can contact us on 01662 4070. And bear with us, it's a little bit busy at the moment, but we'll certainly respond as soon as we can.
Yeah. Well, so if I were responsible for this report, I would have said, we're going to get a flood of calls after this. We need to ensure that reliable, good organisations such as 1in4 and others have the extra resources on hand to deal with it. Unfortunately, we still get stupid little things wrong. Very important things. But I appreciate how you're stretched, but you will answer every call as best you can. Deirdre, thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for your support.
Deirdre
Kenny. Take care.
No problem whatsoever. That's Deirdre Kenny there, of CEO of 1in4, off the back of that report published this morning. Again, if you wish to speak to us or seek any numbers for any support, 086 60 25 000 is the WhatsApp and text number, or give us a call on 074 91 25 000. We will pass them on to you. Right, okay. A caller says, I was a student in the early 80s at a Christian Brothers school. The level of violence was unreal, a combination of violence at school and at home. It affected my mental health permanently. Christian Brothers enjoyed what they did. They were monsters on steroids. Why don't we talk about the brutality of cane use in schools and being beaten up? Sexual abuse is not the only scandal that happened in schools. Beating did not just occur in Catholic schools either, and we just touched on that, that this report should be broadened out to all schools. I think most people might agree. And also, you know, corporal punishment, or however it was phrased, I think lots of us of a certain age did experience that. And just because today we're talking about, and it's not just sexual abuse, sexual and physical abuse of young people, it doesn't in any way take away from someone's experience of a different type of abuse in school. All children should have felt safe and protected, loved and cared for in school. No one should have been abused in any form whatsoever. Beatings in front of other classmates, sexual abuse, it's all bad. And as I say, just because perhaps we're talking about one area of abuse, it doesn't in any way take away from another person's lived experience of their abuse. And all voices should be heard. Hi, Greg. Any chance you air on Highland Radio someday? Monaghan Woods in Killygordon. There's one spot so badly grown over it needs bush cut back. Such a great place to walk the dogs. Who's responsible for Monaghan Woods in Killygordon? It'd be a shame if people can't enjoy it because it's overgrown. I checked this out and it's true. An Irish student who lives near a college gets €195 a month of a maintenance grant. The Ukrainian student gets €1,150 a month. This is really shocking. I'll attach screenshots. And they did. Okay, thank you for that. Everyone should be treated equal. I don't think just because you come from a different place that you should be treated any better or any worse than someone else. This is what causes problems in communities. Greg, talking about a redress scheme, should they can't get the money for the religious from the religious orders for the last one, and I did indicate that, and I think it should be sort of, you know, two-track to make sure that we're not delaying things because we get to the end of a process and then all of a sudden we start saying, oh, who's going to come up with the money? Thanks so much for all your comments coming in. I'll get through as many of them as is possible. I do want to talk about Enoch Burke. We talked about Enoch Burke yesterday, and we were talking about the legal side of things. And, you know, that necessarily doesn't talk to what people's views are about the ethical side of things with the Enoch Burke case. But anyway, we'll talk about some of that. This caller says, I'm very disappointed with Greg Hughes. On 2 days last week, he named J.K. Rowling as transphobic on two occasions. I never referred to anyone as transphobic. She's not transphobic. She fully respects trans people. I know that for a fact. But she also has great issue with trans people competing in sports, trans women competing in women's sports. She's also very vocal about trans men or women in the wrong, what she would see as the wrong prison. I'm very familiar with J.K. Rowling. She also obviously is a great defender of women's spaces and believes that just because someone identifies as a woman or is a trans woman, they should not be able to use those spaces. What I did say is there's two ends of the argument. If I did refer to as transphobic, I know her stance on this inside out. It was I misspoke, but I don't believe I actually did. But she would be seen as the perhaps the strongest voice In relation to that, and is anti-trans in terms of them in women's spaces, in women's sports, and in women's prisons, etc. There's a new complex of apartments besides Supervalue and Ballybuffet. It was targeted for single parents. Can Piers Doherty guarantee that this will go to Irish people who are being evicted or in need of housing? Right, okay, let's take a break because Chris is going to join us shortly because we're going to go through the business news. Highland Radio's Business Matters podcast is live for you right now. We're going to take a quick break and then Chris will join us with a run through the business news and to preview that pod.
Business Matters on Highland Radio is brought to you by local enterprise office Donegal. Find out more about the Energy Efficiency Grant, aimed at helping businesses to operate in a more sustainable way by visiting localenterprise.ie/Donegal.
Christopher Ashmore is with me. Hi, Chris.
Hello, Greg.
Good to see you again. It's been a while. In this slot, obviously, you come in and do sport and stuff and we see you. How are you keeping?
Very good. Very good.
You're looking quite tanned.
Yeah, a little bit of vitamin D. Never does any harm.
Well, quite the opposite. It does good.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Let's get to some news before we talk about what's coming up in the podcast. New research out. About the economy.
Yeah, now this is the Holywell Trust, which is a community relations and community development initiative. It was actually set up in Derry as far back as 1988. They've done a report on the Northwest economy and particularly how cities and regions where there's a border involved kind of cooperate. And the author, Paul Gosling, well, he's, you know, we all know about low disposable income, employment rates and poverty.
Again,
in
new
this,
figures
yeah.
this week showed that we retain that unwanted title.
But, the report shows things like, in particular, if you have better public transport integration and infrastructure and what it can lead to, and there's comparisons with other cities, including Basel in Switzerland, where they have very good cross-border transport because it's right on the border there with Germany and, you know, a lot of European countries. There's a lot of movement across the border, as there is here, into the north, and very much the argument for investment in public transport. And it's probably topic or timely this has come out, and he mentions it with the All-Ireland Rail Review, and they are saying that, you know, movement of people is a great way of fostering economic growth.
Yeah, we have all the info. Yeah. We just need the infrastructure.
Yeah. And a few decisions. Go ahead and let's do things instead of planning and planning.
I couldn't be any less cynical. Yeah. I'm so cynical about it. It's not even funny. Yeah. But I appreciate you raising it and you have to. And talking of those lowest disposable incomes, again, Donegal being the lowest, you know, there's quite a lot of high value employment in this county. So it just goes to show the gaps that are there between the gaps that must be there from the higher earners to the lower income families, because if we retain that lowest figure and you factor in the amount of high paid jobs there are here, it goes to show how tough some people are finding it. And it's something that will never be forgotten on this program, because those people sometimes feel like they are voiceless. A major employer, Tata Consultancy Services, they're tying in with Google further.
Yes, they have expanded a partnership with Google Cloud, essentially offering new cybersecurity solutions for customers. Now, Tata here in Letterkenny, they have a threat management center for cybersecurity. So, you know, this is a big issue. This is good news from a Letterkenny perspective because it, you know, it secures matters here and hopefully will lead to further employment. And as well as that, Tata Consultancy Services has expanded an 8-year partnership with Primark and has announced a new 5-year deal to assist Primark's IT systems when they're setting up new stores. So good positive news there.
Sure. New car registrations for August. There is a national trend.
Yeah, now the national trend is new car registrations were down 8.4%. But here in Donegal, we were actually up over 16% for the month of August. Overall, for the first 8 months of the year, new car sales in Donegal are up about 8% on last year. Now, the Society of the Irish Motor Industry, conscious of this budget that is not too far down the road, down the road. Well, they're saying, look, the electric vehicle market needs a bit of a budget boost because new electric vehicle sales to date this year are actually down by 25%. So, look, we've spoken about it before.
We've talked about it. And I'm almost at the point to stop doing interviews about the millions that are being invested into the charging infrastructure because I don't see any improvement in the charging infrastructure until such time people can reliably charge their cars. Why would you put yourself through that risk and anxiety? Electric cars are great. Some of them have got great range. You can charge them at home, of course, but you want to be able to feel that you can charge them out on the road. And people go down the hybrid route because they feel they're doing something for the environment, but they also have the backup of an ICE engine. And until they solve that and stop waffling and talking about it, the industry is going to struggle to get the message out there. All right, TV production company, what's going on here?
Just on the top, people are always interested, the top five selling brands in the county so far this year. Toyota first, followed by Kia.
Is that the RAV4, I wonder?
Well, this is overall, all the models,
The Kodiak's the top car nationally.
Yeah, and the reason Toyota are doing so well in Donegal, hybrid, you see, as it ties in with what you said.
Really popular, so be interested. Sorry, so number one's Toyota.
Toyota, two Kia, three Skoda, four Volkswagen, and five Hyundai. So that's your top five in Donegal so far this year.
Hyundai, a lot of those, they've some quite attractive, the Ioniq 5 and what have you as well. Indeed. I wonder, is that where people are going for the electric? Right, Lidgid TV Productions.
Yeah, now Lidgid TV Productions, this is an award-winning independent TV production company. It's based in Donegal and also is active in Derry amongst Irish speakers. And it's created and produced a new children's cookery series. And it's on Coola 4, which is part of TG Caherall, connected in there. And it's presented by a young baker from Gwydor, Evin O'Dea. And this new series is going to be launched next week, I think, or this weekend. We'll hear more about that in the future.
Very
interesting little story there.
For
yeah.
Sure. Right, okay. Let's get on to what's on this week's Business Matters podcast.
Yeah, busy programme. First of all, I've been speaking with Louise Patton. Now, she's the secretary of the Ballybofey and Stranorlar Business Chamber. And believe it or not, Greg, they've never had a Chamber Awards night in the Twin Towns. So this is going to be the first one. It's coming up. It'll be held in the Villa Rose Hotel. It's not just confined to businesses. Also, and this is important, recognising people in the community, people in sporting organisations and voluntary work. So Louise says there's been a great response so far to get nominations in. And they've had a very positive feedback as well.
And it's creating a real buzz in the town, which is lovely to see. Tables are filling up as well. For every category, we will have three finalists. So that will probably get a lot of momentum going as well. So, no, it's very exciting at the moment in Ballybofey. Yeah. So it's not just the business awards. It's also the community is recognised and the clubs and things as well, which would be, it's lovely to see everybody brought together. And it's not just for businesses. We want to appreciate people and we want to point out the good things in Ballybofey, because there are so many.
Yeah, brilliant idea. Brilliant night out by the sounds of things, proving popular. I'm sure if you want your table, you can get in contact with the chamber there. Right, Chris, what else?
Business in the Community Ireland. Now, this is a business-based group. They are liaising with local schools. They bring in employees and it's a sort of a two-way thing. It helps closer links with the community. And basically they have volunteers from companies that come in, deliver education programs with both primary and post-primary schools. And in this clip, Pamela Kearney, who's the Northwest Regional Organiser, she gives an example of how one Donegal firm tied in with a local school in a very practical way.
I'll give you an example. Gallagher's Bakehouse, one of my companies. They're working with St. Columba's in Glenties. And they set the young people a challenge as part of their programme, and their programme was a World of Work programme. And that their challenge was for the young people to come up with new gluten-free products. So what was wonderful was the young people actually did go home. They involved their aunties, they involved grannies, uncles, granddads to make chocolate chip cookies and cakes and bread to come up with really genuine recipes that the company could actually think about in terms of product development. So it's mutually beneficial for all the partners who are involved in the projects.
All right, now, our last item for this morning, Chris.
Yes, now, House Building Finance Ireland, a lot of people may not have heard of them. It was set up by the government back pre-COVID times. Now, it was really to lend money to building companies so that they can build new homes. Many companies went out of business after the crash, after the Celtic Tiger, and also small builders maybe not being able to get loans from banks. So money was put aside. So far, they've approved more than 2.1 billion in finance for building houses and apartments in 23 counties across the country, including 13 million for over 100 homes here in Donegal. And it wants to do a lot more in Donegal. So the Home Building Finance Ireland, it's hosting a breakfast event in the Radisson Blue Hotel here in Letterkenny on Tuesday, 8 o'clock start for that. And they want to speak to people involved in the building industry. Here's their business development manager, David Fox.
What we're looking to do in the Radisson Blue Hotel next Tuesday morning in Letterkenny is, you know, outline how developer, builder, or, you know, professionals that are within the industry that come along, we've outlined, you know, how they can, you know, apply for the funds and how we can make that as smooth a process as possible for them, and, you know, and then get it turned around as quickly as possible.
All right, a lot of interesting stuff in there, Chris. People can hear those interviews in their entirety on the podcast right now. It's available for you on our website to stream or download. HighlandRadio.com. It'll be in the news section for a wee while. It drops down the running order there. So the real place to go is to the listen back section, which has all the previous episodes of the podcast, also the podcast of this show and loads of other material, The Score, Dale Debate. It's a great little resource there for you to listen to radio on demand. More and more people are. BBC now, through their app, 40% of their content is consumed on demand, believe it or not, Chris.
And you know, you can go on, as you said there, and you click on one thing and then on another thing, and it's almost a bottomless pit. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. A pit be sounding quite negative.
Okay. It's almost
a bottomless resource.
It's almost a pool full of information.
It's the podcast palace. What it is.
Yes.
Yeah, it's the podcast palace. Right, Chris, if people want to listen to it, as many do, as part of a scheduled programming, Sunday's the day.
Sunday after the 6 o'clock news. And if you want to contact me, you can email businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
All right, Chris, we bid you adieu until next Wednesday at around about this time. Thanks very much, Chris Ashmore there. Back after the break. I'm not stating this is a scientific fact as we head into Wellness Wednesday, but for many people, the conversation about vaping was about a smoking cessation aid. Many people who were smokers and couldn't give up, eventually were able to give up by using vaping products. The safety message, I think, has been a little bit confused in that often the early conversation was how safe it was compared to smoking, for an example. And there's some conflicting views on that. But I think the stage was set for it to be seen as, you know, the much lesser of two evils. But now what we're seeing is more and more people vaping that never vaped before. I would love to see genuine statistics on how many teenagers now vape, how many teenagers now are addicted to nicotine. And it's not just teenagers, of course, it's across all demographics. And more so we're seeing cannabis type products or derivatives in vapes now. You will know over €3,000 worth of these suspected products were seized in South Donegal last week. And that was triggered by a medical emergency. Someone obviously had been taking one of these products, had an adverse reaction to it. A Garda investigation ensued, and so then did the seizure. So now we're going to talk about vaping and the risks of it. The Parent Hub Donegal, in association with Donegal Parent Support Champions, presents an information talk for parents, teenagers and vaping. So it's for parents, it's about teenagers and vaping. Our guest today is Christina McElhenney, the Alcohol and Other Drugs Coordinator with the Donegal ETB. Thank you very much for joining us, Christina.
Thank you, Greg, for having me. I'm delighted to be able to speak on this topic for sure, and particularly at this time of year, you know, when we have a lot of young children.
And just before you can go, Christina, if you are on loudspeaker, could you lift the handset? Maybe you're not. It's just I want to make sure that I can hear absolutely clearly.
Okay, I will. I'll change that to... taken off the speaker. I was on loudspeaker there, so off the speaker now. Is that better? Brilliant.
Absolutely, much better. It just gets rid of that little echo. So go ahead, Christine, and pick up where you left off there.
Yeah, I'm just saying thanks, Sarah, for that invitation, particularly at this time of year. And I'd like to say thanks to Faroiga and Parents Hub and that. You know, it is a topic of conversation, particularly, you know, when we have young children moving from, you know, primary school on to secondary school. And they're going to be, you know, quite tempted to get involved in the use of vapes and stuff like that. Now, you brought to, you know, to the listeners there, the actual things that are, you know, being contained in vapes now that we really do need to exercise a little bit more caution around the use of these particular things. And indeed, they were originally developed as a harm reduction intervention. Well, things have changed as we've got to know them because they've been on the market from about the early 2000s, about 2003. And there's been a few very important studies that have been done on them in the last couple of years, most particularly. And basically, there was a piece of research done by Johns Hopkins University. And they were basically saying that there are hundreds of unknown chemicals in these particular products. And now we're seeing unknown synthetic chemicals in the products as well that are semi-synthetic and fully synthetic cannabinoids. And, you know, these synthetic cannabinoids have been around for a while and we're seeing them being introduced and developed because that's the kind of world that we're in. They can have some very adverse and life-threatening effects on people, and definitely they can have very severe mental health effects on people as well. So what's been discovered recently in these particular vapes are things like HHC, which was developed and introduced and found in America around 21 and made its way to Europe around 2022, and that's a hexahydrocannabinol. And that's a semi-synthetic. And then we have THCP, which is a completely synthetic chemical compound. So this is what we're talking about. This is nothing to do with THC or CBD. They're actual fully chemical synthetic compounds developed to have particular effects. And they are quite risky. Mm-hmm. And the thing about it is that these new semi-synthetic and synthetic cannabinoids, there's absolutely no regulation and law on them. So they can appear in these vapes because, technically speaking, they haven't been controlled under the Misuse of Drugs Act yet.
And effectively what you might have is you have someone who, to all intents and purposes, is smoking cannabis. It's different, it's derivatives of it and all that kind of stuff, but effectively that is what they're doing. But also, too, that's very, very important, of course, but we have a generation of people addicted to nicotine and high levels of nicotine as well that never, ever smoked before. That in and of itself would be an alarm bells for me. Like someone who stopped smoking and used sort of vapes would probably, you know, have the whole kit. And a lot of people who stop smoking would vape, say, 3 milligrams or 6 milligrams of nicotine. These vapes contain, a lot of them contain 20 milligrams of nicotine. Now, if you get accustomed to 20 milligrams of nicotine and you try and go off that, right, you are talking about trying to give up one of the most addictive substances on the planet. And there's tens of thousands of teenagers just walking around puffing 20 milligrams of nicotine in vapes, not to mention the stuff that you mentioned. And no one seems to be batting an eyelid.
I think they are batting an eyelid, you know, and I think it does take a wee bit of time to do the research and find out what's in these actual things you see, and that's the problem. Mm. The type of the world that we're in right now is that any chemical compound can make its way onto the market because there are no regulations to stop it, because they're developed and they're fired onto the market before anybody can actually do anything about them. That's the kind of world that we're in when it comes to these psychoactive substances and that. Mm-hmm. The concern for vaping is not only do you have psychoactive substances in them, such as nicotine and other, you know, semi-synthetic cannabinoids and synthetic cannabinoids in them, you also have very dangerous things like formaldehyde, acetaldehyde, carcinogens. You know, these are actually carcinogenic. You have, you know, there was a study done and there was 127 hazardous chemicals found in vapes that were acutely toxic. There was 153 of health hazards. And there was 225 irritants in them. And this was done by RSCI 2024, you know, a huge piece of research that was done. And what they were trying to do was begin to forecast the vacant health risks in the neural network model prediction failures and pyrolysis reactions. So what they're actually saying is this.
I just need you to move your mouth that many closer.
Flavors.
Yeah.
Yeah. They contain so many flavors and, you know, and smells and that type of thing. And these flavors were all developed, you know, for food. And they weren't developed to be heated up as chemicals and mixed with other chemicals. Now, the lungs are breathing this in.
Yeah.
And that now has created a new condition that is notable around the world called E-Valley. And that's e-cigarette vaping-associated lung injury. Now, because these are relatively a new product, we don't know what the long-term damage to lungs actually is. And if I was offering a piece of advice to young people, particularly who have any respiratory difficulties, you know, that might have asthma or something like that. Look, plain and simple advice is stay clear of these things.
For sure.
Another thing that our scientific, you know, discipline are actually looking at the minute as well is secondary effects of inhaling someone else's vape.
All right, okay. So listen, I'm going to have to move on because we've come to the end of the program. But all of this will be discussed in great detail on Tuesday, the 10th of September. It's between 7 p.m. and 8 p.m. The speaker is our own here, Christine McElhenney, Alcohol and Other Drugs Coordinator with Donegal ETB. You can book your place by going to Eventbrite. What's the best way of getting that link? I can't really read the ERL or the URL, sorry, Christina. So if parents want to book a slot, so you know how many are going to be there, what's the best way? And it's only 7 to 8. It's online, isn't it? So what's the best way of getting my spot secured on that?
Okay, to the best of my knowledge, you do go on to the event link. And if anybody has any problem getting a link, that you can actually get directly in contact with me. And they can phone Highland Radio for my details.
And we'll link it on our socials.
Yeah, you link it on the socials then.
Okay,
thank you very much.
Vaping the risks. If you search that on Eventbrite, it should pop up. Thank you very much, Christina McElhenney. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. Believe it or not, that sounds like that sounds terrible. But the seats are filling up. It seems that on Green On Theatre for our live show between 9 and 12 on Friday, where we have four fantastic acts, the cream of the crop of Northwest performers, singing three songs each live as they vie for the title of the local hero from Highland Radio. Me, Paul McDevitt, Jimmy Stafford are going to be there. There'll be plenty of crack and great music. You can watch it live by calling the On Green On box office or going online to ongreenon.com and booking your tickets. There's a dozen, so you're going to be there at this point, hopefully. Fingers crossed. All right. Chat to you tomorrow at 9.